Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us.
Hi, Minerva. Welcome to the What You Next podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Laura.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, my name is Minerva Spencer. I write historical romance, primarily Regency, although I've recently been venturing out into Victorian. And I just had a book come out, Notorious, which is the first in a new series for me.
So we're going to chat about Notorious a little bit later, and I can't wait. So let's talk about your writing process. Like, what inspired you to become a writer?
I'm an obsessive type of person in everyday life, so I approach writing obsessively as well. And when the ideas come, I try to write as much as possible. I feel like, you know, when the muse shows up, I don't want to piss her off. So I do a lot of writing in huge blocks. And then when I'm not being very creative or not feeling very creative, then I do a lot of editing. And I'm not a plotter, which a lot of my writer buddies are. I really envy them, the way that they can, you know, plan out a story and actually know where things are going.
Yeah.
For me, I sit down and just start writing.
Awesome. So you're like, you're surprised. So how do you develop your characters? Do they come first or does the story come first?
Well, I generally have an idea of somebody, I guess, you know, I really am not very introspective about my own process, I suppose, but I generally get an idea of a character. They show up, usually they have a name and they have a problem. And so I sit down and start writing, and it's really a kind of an exploration every day. A friend of mine calls it discovery writing, and I think that that's pretty accurate. You know, I really don't know what's going to happen at all. And I don't understand how that process works, you know, but I definitely notice when I try to force behavior or dialogue on a character, I definitely notice when it's not right. So the characters do come fully formed. You just have to kind of discover them.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's just like a process. So it's good that they come fully formed, and then you get to see what they lead you in the story when you're pantsing your way through it.
Right. Pantsing.
Yeah.
I love that word.
Yeah. So what was your journey to get that first book published?
One of those super lucky people. I just sent out, I think I sent out 5 or 6, query letters to a couple of agents and a couple of editors. And 3 weeks later, I sold my first 3 books. So I have a really skewed idea of how the business runs after that. In the years since then, I've realized, no, that doesn't happen every time. That's really lucky. Mm-hmm. So that was really nice. But at the same time, like I say, when I send out a book, I expect, you know, 3 weeks and a response and a book offer. And of course it doesn't happen every time. So there's a good and bad side to that.
Oh yeah. I can imagine. I think the book process changes basically based on books and based on needs. So, you know, yeah. Maybe 3 weeks later is not the right timeline. Yeah.
No, not usually. And I think it's gotten in the last couple of years, I sold my first books in 2017. And I think it's gotten a lot tougher as you see all these publishing houses either going out of business completely or being bought out by a bigger house and absorbed.
Yeah.
A lot tougher now.
Awesome. So what was the source of inspiration for Notorious and the series itself?
Actually, it kind of sprang out of my first trilogy, which is called The Outcasts. And those are actually the first books I ever wrote. And at the time that I wrote them, I didn't really have a whole lot of experience reading romance, believe it or not. I had read Victoria Holt as a very young woman. Mm-hmm. And then recently I had read some Georgette Heyer. Mm-hmm. But The story, like I said, the story just came to me and I started writing, and it turned out that my heroes and heroines in those first three books were all a bit older than the norm. And they, several of them had children, adult children. And so in the course of telling those three stories, I really got to know these children, and that's, and it's those kids who are the heroes and heroines of this next trilogy. So, for example, the hero in Notorious is the son of the heroine in my very first book. So he's been around through several books. You kind of get a glimpse of him, and it's been a lot of fun to develop one character throughout. I guess this would be the fourth book that he's appeared in.
Oh my gosh, now I need to go back. Because I was fascinated by the Marchioness story. I was like, wait, what just happened? You know, she's married to a sultan, and then she's married to a marquise. I'm like, what is going on?
She is a lot of fun. And that couple, I have to admit, Adam and Mia are definitely my favorite couple that I've written. And I just love giving them a little time in subsequent books. And I think, well, she was such an unusual heroine in that I didn't know that I was supposed to write, you know, virginal 18-year-old girls as the heroines of Regency romance, which is pretty much the standard, or it has been for many years. Things are changing now, and there's a bit more variety. But so Mia was, you know, she was a woman in her 30s who had an adult son and had lived a life, really. So that was a lot of fun, you know, to have somebody that kind of developed and dimensional.
Yeah. And so what was the research process like to write historical romance? I'm always curious too, like, what kind of stuff do you research? You Google, like, how do you get in the mindset of, you know, back in the olden days in England?
Well, it varies from book to book. If the story is primarily set in England, which Notorious is, then it makes it a lot easier, because at this point, I've written 22 Regencies. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff that now I know from prior experience. But with books where I kind of veer out of the norm, for example, in my earlier books, they were set in North Africa, and then also in West Africa. And that required a lot of reading. Specifically, you know, I would go back and just read, you know, what was Britain doing in these parts of the world at that time? And I mean, I'm a historian by training. I taught college history for 5 years. So I'm pretty accustomed to doing research. This was much more directed research, because, you know, it's a historical romance, and the romance is always the focus of the story. So I have to be careful not to swamp my readers with too much history. And my editor is very good at saying, okay, maybe we don't need to have 4 pages of information on the, you know, on any specific historical incident. So she kind of keeps me in line. And generally, I do way more historical research than I need for a book, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think, and maybe once you have been writing within the same period of time, it gets easier, because you already know the information. You're like, oh, it's like, I already know this is lights were this way, or we use candles, or we use corsets.
So. Right. Yeah, and it was really a big change. I just wrote a book that's set in mid-Victorian, and it made me realize how much I did know about the Regency, because just things like, oh, well, you know, what streets would have had gas lighting, you know, in 1857 that didn't in 1816. So it was kind of a relearning process, all that stuff over again. So I'm a bit more hesitant to start diving into different historical eras and having to relearn everything all over again.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about this book. So this book is an emerging convenience, kind of like hate to lovers / pining, you know, crushes. Was it characters led you to that this is going to be, they're going to end up having this opportunity for marriage and then, you know, development? Or was it something you had planned from the beginning that this was going to be, this trope was going to work?
I had no idea who was going to be, I mean, to me, since Gabriel is a special character who I'd grown attached to, I mean, I just really didn't know who would appeal to him. And maybe that's why I like this marriage of convenience where you kind of shove two people together against their will and, you know, they have to make it work. Mm-hmm. And I was, of course, in this situation, you know, Drusilla, I'm not giving anything away by saying that she has been madly in love with him, you know, mm-hmm. for quite some time, but considers him out of her league. And also, that's not her game plan for her life, you know, not becoming some man's property. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm the same as you. I like that conflict that comes inherent with forcing people to get married. And that's fun. The fun part about this period of time is that there were so many ways to get in trouble by doing things that nowadays we, you know, it wouldn't matter to us if somebody caught you kissing a guy at a party, right? But back then it's like, oh no, it's not just your life that is it's potentially ruined. Yeah, it's your family, your younger sisters over there. They're going to be the sisters of that trollop who was kissing the guy, you know? So it's just such a interesting package. Mm-hmm.
Yes. And you brought up the attention about being someone's property and Rob Merch and the conflict that Drusilla has when she's like, you know, I believe Mary Wollens, I cannot say her
name. It's a hard one.
It's a hard name. But it's the same, but I'm like, and that conflict of like, you know, women's rights are lost when they get married, when they become a property. All her money becomes the husband's money and all these different things. And so, you know, even though she's in love with Gabriel, she's afraid of losing her power, you know.
Oh yeah. And you know, just I think there are a couple different levels of what it is that she's worried about. Obviously there's, you know, she's insecure about her parents, and I mean, like, I think everybody who's, you know, lived to the age of 20 has had experiences where, you know, you have a crush on somebody and you just feel like, wow, this person's way out of my league, you know? And so you're not going to be at your best when you're in a situation dealing with them, because you're going to feel insecure. And that's kind of the position she starts from. Mm-hmm. And so she's constantly struggling to, I mean, I think she really wants to, she wants to let herself trust him, but at the same time, you know, there's her feelings that are involved. And also, like you said, there's the legal issue. And you know, you could tie up your money and keep it away from somebody. That was always possible to do by legal means, but you could never protect your person, you know? So that was her real concern. And I think those two things, in my mind, she's more worried about her heart being hurt. Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that loving somebody and them not loving you back would be, you know, being married to them would be a very painful situation. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what motivates her a lot along the way. And I think a lot of people think, oh, well, it's, why isn't she more, you know, why isn't she crusading more for women's rights or whatever? And I think we need to remember that, hey, this is early in the day, right? I mean, mm-hmm. American women didn't get the vote until the early 20th century. So even the small actions that she's taking, you know, to not marry, that was considered a radical action for a rich young woman, mm-hmm. you know? And anyway, I forgot where I was going with that, but I think she does the best she can dealing with her heart and her kind of devotion to the cause. And I do mention briefly in the book about Wollstonecraft herself fell in love with a man who wouldn't marry her, and she attempted suicide. So, you know, here's somebody who's writing about the rights of women who also had a problem with kind of, you know, justifying her personal beliefs with her kind of credo. So I think that's an interesting conflict right there.
It is. So what can we expect for the rest of the books of the series?
Well, it just so happens I've written both and they're both in production right now. I know I'm never supposed to say this, but the next book, Outrageous, I think that has to be my favorite book. I just had so much fun writing that. I mean, Eva and Godric are just, boy, sometimes characters just really click. And this story just came out so smoothly. And it's also, it's my very first kind of road road story, you know, road trip. Yeah. It takes place. A lot of it takes place in a carriage. They're trapped together. So you get a lot of FaceTime with them. Mm-hmm. And the dialogue is just, I was just rereading it for the final edits and I was like laughing out loud. And I think that's a good sign when I can make myself laugh mm-hmm. after, you know, having read it for the fifth time. So they're a lot of fun. And then the third book, which I had worried about, is my very first attempt at having, there's two romances, because it's, that one involves the twin mm-hmm. sons, who have also been in the story from the various stories. And it's a double romance. So I'll be, it features basically two heroes and two heroines, which I've never done before.
Oh my gosh, that sounds complicated.
And it's a Christmas story, which I've also never done before.
Ooh. So,
yeah. So that one turned out to be a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
Oh, this is so exciting. I'm looking forward to both books. Well, I'm looking forward to reading the previous three books to get a sense of, you know, all these characters, you know, and your parents' story. So.
And they all pop up, and I try to sprinkle them a little bit in both of the next books as well. So it is fun for me to revisit them. Mm-hmm. It's always a challenge to revisit them without confusing a reader who's just popped in at that book. But mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a little bit more of those characters in the next two as well.
Oh, fantastic. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. This is an opportunity to share with our audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
Well, I don't read the genre that I'm currently writing. So when I'm working on a historical romance, for example, I avoid reading any historical romance just because I don't want that idea bleed to kind of happen while I'm writing. Mm-hmm. But earlier in the year, I was writing a historical mystery. So I had a chance to catch up with historical romance. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm kind of in a in-between relaxation period. I just read Elizabeth Hoyt's recent book, the second book in that series.
Yeah.
I think it's called, shoot, what the heck is it called?
When a Gentle Roe Meets His Match.
His Match, yes. Yeah. And I love her writing a lot. So that was fun. And that was something that I rewarded myself with when I finished the project. I also enjoy reading. I like Vanessa Kelly. She writes a series called Clan Kendrick. Mm-hmm. And she makes me laugh all the time. So when I'm looking for something that, you know, is, I think it's a good, her books are great for this year in particular, just because they're so clever and fun. And let's see what else. Another series that I just started is Anna Bradley has a series called The Swooning Virgin Society, which, how can you not read a book that is part of a series called that? And her first book just came out, and that's The Virgin Who Ruined Lord Grey. And that's a very compulsively readable story. So those are a couple in that. And then I also like to read historical mystery as well. And I recently read Sherry Thomas's, it's her fourth book in the Lady Sherlock series.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah. And Victoria Thompson is another I like to read. She also writes in Gilded Age, New York. And that's the Sarah Brandt series. I think that's like on book 25. But those are a couple of the authors that I would definitely recommend if any of the listeners haven't read their books, they're missing out.
Yeah, I love those recommendations. So tell us where we can find you online.
I am fairly active on Facebook, and you can find me there under Minerva Spencer, or I also write under the pen name SM LaViolette, but Spencer is probably a lot easier to spell. Mm-hmm. And you can also find me on my website, which is minervaspencer.com, where I post my upcoming releases and things of that nature.
That's fantastic. Thank you, Minerva, for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, rate, and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Once you connect with fellow romance readers and make new friends, get weekly book recommendations, attend monthly meetups, then join our Patreon community. You can join at whatchreadnextblog.com/Patreon. Romance lovers, check out Queen Bee Reads Etsy shop for cute and comfortable bookish apparel. The shop also features social justice apparel and fun items from some of your favorite TV shows like The Schitt's Creek and The Office. Use code WHATTORead10 to save. Visit whattoreadnextblog.com/queenbeereads. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Discover new podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.